Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is Hayden Humphrey, a digital creator and life coach who helps people break out of the scripts and stories that keep them stuck so they can become the creators of their own lives. In this conversation, we commiserate over our work and training experience as coaches, the journey that comes with going back home again, and the value of empowering laughter alongside healing and understanding. Side by Side is now available on all major listening platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Amazon Music. Give us a like and leave us a review if you find value in our conversations. All our content is available at sidebysidepodcast.podbean.com. In addition, if you're interested in working with me, you can find my offerings at www.robertkwonghome.com. Awesome. Yeah, I had some like just general questions about you because we're sort of also getting to connect like for real inside of this conversation as well. So we know each other from the coaching world. We have crossed paths and we have gone through the same like training program and things like that, but we never formally were able to like introduce ourselves to each other. So this is a little bit about just like, hey, I would love to meet Hayden in some ways.
Yeah. Great. Cool.
Well, first of all, you're one of the people, several people I know from Ohio. And it's so funny when I think of like folks I know and where they're based, because there's a lot of New Yorkers, a lot of people in California, but I know quite a few. I've crossed paths with so many people who are from the great state of Ohio. So it makes me
Let's go.
There must be something magical there. But yeah, what was growing up in Ohio like?
Oh my gosh, great question. Yeah. I really appreciated like where I grew up and, you know, my childhood. And you know, it's one of those funny things, right? Because you're like, I don't, you know, can't compare it to anything. But, you know, I grew up in a very small suburb of Columbus. So Columbus is the capital of Ohio. It's like one of the largest. I don't know if it's the largest city. I think that it is, but I'm not 100% confident versus like that or like Cleveland or Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. But I grew up in a really small suburb right outside of Columbus called Bexley, Ohio. It's like a 2 square mile town city. And I feel very fortunate to have grown up there, like really excellent public education, like really excellent grade school, high school. I feel really grateful and fortunate about, you know, for the education that I got when I was growing up there. Super safe, you know, very community centric and that sort of thing, which was awesome. You know, and it's been interesting too, like starting to uncover or just sort of assess the things that you pick up from where you grow up and the influences and that sort of thing. I was also, you know, I was very fortunate in that it was a wealthier suburb and like a wealthier town. And I think that that sometimes can also come with its, you know, fair share of complications and, you know, particular cultural elements and beliefs that I'm realizing now have not been necessarily the most helpful and, you know, have not necessarily been like the most empowered ways to think about myself or, you know, think about the world. And so, yeah, I mean, I loved it. I went to college here too, at Ohio University, which is in Athens, Ohio. It's like an hour south of Columbus. And that was super great. But, you know, I've spent the majority of my adult life, like not living here. I lived in San Francisco for about a year and a half. And then I moved to Chicago. Right. Yeah. And I was in Chicago for about 6 years. And so I just moved back, not just, but I moved back to Columbus, a year ago, pretty much this week. So it's been a really also interesting experience, like coming back here as this new older version of myself, experiencing in that way.
What do you notice about where you grew up coming back? Like what was going on in your internal world as you were having that journey? I have a couple other people who have gone back to Ohio after, you know, for one reason or another. And I think it's quite interesting to go back home again.
Definitely. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and I know, you know, it's the conversation around who you are in so many ways is formed by the people that you grew up with and your parents and your siblings and your extended family and your neighbors and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so I have throughout the course of my life really been committed to and prioritized self-knowledge and learning about myself and really peeling back the layers and uncovering more of the truth of who I actually am. And I think that moving away was really important in that there were certain elements, certain dynamics in my family that I didn't necessarily feel the best. And so it made sense for me to leave, and it made sense for me to, you know, create space and create physical space. And, you know, now having gone through what I've gone through with coaching and training and learning more about myself and learning, you know, how to set boundaries and learning how to be direct and learning how to speak my truth and that sort of thing. Now coming back, feeling like I've got myself in a way that I didn't when I was younger, now being able to continue to do this work with my family, specifically my mom and my sister who live here, and some of my extended, you know, family members and that sort of thing, being able to continue to do this work with them is just a whole other level of amazingness. Like it truly is like healing work. I'm obviously very passionate about it. And I think being able to do that kind of healing work with your family is like a whole other level, you know, of, you know, connectedness and intimacy and healing and that sort of thing. And so, you know, it's funny coming back and spending time in some of the original dynamics that made you who you are, and but being older and being a different version of yourself and being able to look at those dynamics and understand more intimately why they're there and how they shaped you, but also being able to actively choose out of it and actively, you know, be in a conversation around having that, you know, dynamic be different. So it's been challenging, it's been confronting, you know, in triggering in ways, but at the same time, like, it's all been in service of creating a much deeper level of connection with myself, which has absolutely happened, and with my family, which has been, you know, really amazing.
One thing that you've worked on both in your coaching practice and your offerings for clients, and also just for yourself, you've talked about these themes. One is, you know, to help get us out of these scripts that we have adopted into growing up, or oftentimes they're unconscious as well. And so what are some of the common scripts that you really had to work on? Because, you know, within coaching training, these are the things we look at so that we can stand in our core and hold space for others.
Yeah.
What were some of those scripts?
Definitely. Well, at least two of the big ones that come to mind for me. One is, you know, the typical sort of achievement and career trajectory. And I know this is a super common one for a lot of people, but, you know, it's the whole idea of, like, you know, as you grow up, you go to college, you have to go to college, and you do really well in college so that you can get a really good job in corporate. And then once you're in corporate, you just continue to achieve and you climb up the ladder and, you know, X, Y, and Z, on and on and on. I realized relatively quickly in my sort of participating in that script that that was not what I wanted to do. And like, that was not for me. I recognized that at the beginning of 2017 in a corporate job that I was working in, a sales job, I missed my sales quota, and it kicked off this whole realization around how I didn't want to do that. And I wanted to be self-employed and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's a really typical one, like ideas that are given to us about what our careers are supposed to look like and what a good job means and what a safe job means and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I think one of the other ones that I'm coming to realize and appreciate more deeply as of late is this idea of, like, it's all on you, or like the best way to be is completely self-reliant. You know, I think that, there are it's going to be different for every person, but I recognize a script that I had was that basically, like, I need to be my own person and I need to do everything myself and I shouldn't rely on other people. I shouldn't expect like encouragement or praise from other people. And so, it's like this story of, you know, hyper independence. But I think for, you know, a lot of folks more broadly, it's just this set of expectations and stories that we play into about what our life should look like. Anytime we use the word should, it's usually a pretty good indication that there's some story, external story that we've internalized about what we're supposed to be doing and, you know, how we're supposed to be spending our time. And, you know, over time, I think I feel like I sort of stumbled into it in the beginning, but over time, I've really been practicing strengthening my resolve around uncovering all of the ways that my life has been scripted and all of the ways that I've been given these ideas about who I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be doing. So, you know, to the point that you made, standing in your core, to me, that is the truth of who you are. The parts of yourself that you know to be true, because they feel good and they feel right to you. And it requires, an immense amount of self-reflection and introspection and questioning and experimenting and that sort of thing. But to me, if there is a purpose in life, it is self-actualization. It's self-expression in the fullest sense of the word, understanding the deepest depths and, you know, deepest levels of who you are, the uniqueness of who you are, and then being able to express that and create a life externally that reflects that internal knowing.
Yeah, it's so funny you mentioned that because, you know, it wasn't until I started doing like creative writing on my own that I started really developing like an internal world and really thought about, wait, what is the pattern? Like, how am I engaging with relationships? How am I engaging with friendships and growing up and entering the workforce? And one of the ways that I found that I could develop and understand my own perspective and my patterns is through something like creative expression and writing. Doing that kind of stuff, because, you know, you've done like sketch comedy, you do like improv,
sure,
and things, sure, that where the expectation is to hone a script and storytelling and look at structure. But did that also help you understand ways in which you were being scripted and not just for, you know, people paying to be entertained?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And, you know, when I think about, like, you know, what is it that supported or enabled that understanding, that continued understanding? For me, I mean, there are really two key pieces, at least. One is, I think that because of the personality that I have and because of the family that I grew up in, I think I developed a more introverted orientation to life. And I think as a result of that, I spent a lot of time alone. I spent a lot of time by myself. I spent a lot of time in my own head, sort of talking with myself, if you will. And through that, I think
same.
Coming to recognize, like building this relationship with myself internally and coming to understand and over time appreciate the value in asking myself questions and recognizing my own thinking and asking myself questions about when things happened or when I had certain reactions to things, asking myself questions about it, being curious, being in the inquiry, you know, of self. And also, I think an element of that too is tendency that I have to be observational. I really enjoy observing things. I really, really enjoy sitting and watching the way that things play out, especially with people, you know, watching the ways that people are. It's probably a huge reason why I do, you know, the work that I do is I'm just fascinated. I'm fascinated by these underlying patterns. What are the core patterns in life that drive everything? And so I think my tendency towards introversion was a really important element of that. And I think the other piece that you just shared is writing. And that has shown up for me in, you know, a number of ways. Like you mentioned, I have spent a bit of time doing like sketch writing. I do a lot of, historically, I've done a lot of writing online, creating content, blog posts, mm-hmm. newsletters, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, what I would say is that probably the form of that has been most beneficial for me is journaling and really sort of like writing for myself. And it's funny because, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day about writing and how much I enjoy writing. And they were like, what do you write about? And I was like, I don't really know how to explain this to you because I journal constantly. I am constantly, constantly, constantly journaling throughout the day. It was funny. I was looking at my phone before this and looking at my screen time and looking at the number of pickups. And it's like my top app after I pick up my phone by far is notes, because every day I have like a journaling page where I'm just taking notes of things that come into my brain that feel important or that I want to remember or questions that I'm asking myself or whatever it is. So in a sense, I'm in this constant conversation with myself. And there are elements to that that are like not super fun, because sometimes it can lead to rumination and it can lead to, you know, like focusing in on less than desirable thought patterns that can kind of keep you stuck in things. And at the same time, I think that it's also supported me in developing this tendency and this and this orientation to being aware of what I'm thinking, how I'm thinking, how I'm feeling, what, you know, what I'm doing. And, you know, there's definitely been other forms of creative expression that I've participated in, like improv and, you know, that sort of thing. And through those mediums, definitely have, you know, had further realizations about why I am the way that I am and the scripts that I'm following and that sort of thing. But, you know, I think at the core of it, when I look at, for me in particular, it's really been this, you know, tendency towards introversion and orientation to introversion and this writing habit that I've developed over time.
So in creating your own content, doing your own writing, doing comedy, which I think is harder. It's a harder form of like genre than drama generally. Because I went to writing school and I was just like, some of this stuff, people don't understand kind of the experience of doing the writing unless they try make an attempt.
Yeah.
Is there any like misconceptions that you feel like you've come across about creating content, scripts, sketches, storytelling, like common misconceptions?
Maybe not necessarily misconceptions, but I think, you know, one of the things that I notice both in my own experience, but then I think also with a lot of other people is a focus on how people are, it's almost like writing for other people. Right. And I think that there is value in that. Like I do think that there is value in being cognizant of who is your audience and what are you trying to tell them and what are you trying to say to them. But I think that often people end up sort of missing out on the beauty and power of their own voice because they're so focused on how it's going to be taken or, you know, trying to say the right thing and making people happy. Even when it comes to comedy, you know, I think that there's a missed opportunity in trying to write for other people. What I will say is, like, I don't feel I have enough experience in this to really speak to this in like a way that feels confident. But at the very least, in my own experience, what I found to be more enjoyable and what I also think found to be funnier, or like what people found to be funnier, was the stuff that I wrote that I thought was funny.
Right.
Like I was writing to make myself laugh and to create things that I thought were funny and enjoyable. And I think in doing that, I was able to create things that were inherently different than what people might've been used to. And they felt like they were more sort of aligned and in the style of, my own voice. And so, I think that'll, but it also requires, I think, a lot of risk taking. I think it requires a lot of self work and a willingness to be honest. That's something that I really have recognized too recently, is even in my own writing, starting to understand the ways in which I have sort of covered up or dismissed my own truth in service of creating things that I think people are going to like and validate, instead of things that may have a deeper, more resonant impact because they are honest and people might not agree with them. I might get criticism, I might get feedback, but that's okay. But that it's an okay part of, it's a risk that you have to take if you're really looking to create something that is meaningful and that is engaging and that really catches people's attention and speaks to people.
Yeah, I think what I hear in what you shared, which is so poignant and poetic to me as a writer, as a fellow writer, is that you can't fake like you caring about something. Like that's at the end of the day, it's probably one of the, like you either are caring about this for yourself because it makes you laugh, because you enjoy the experience, because you're trying to navigate something for yourself that you just care about. But oftentimes when we're writing for an audience, or sometimes, you know, when we get into like industry, it really becomes about that, trying to copy and model certain things that will get you to be a good writer or to have a good script. But sometimes you lose the genuine motivation that you actually cared like that you cared first.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, maybe there's something there because sometimes that can get like trained out of you, which is to actually be like, how do
yes.
I, what do I care about this? Or do I like this? Or what do I think about this? And I yes. think there can be a balance, but without that component, you just constantly chameleonizing yourself for some exterior
yes.
notion, right? But anyway, that really
very much so. Well, it's yeah. like, you know, it becomes this conversation too of like, what's the intention too? Like why write? Like, right? Like, why write? Why create any, like create anything? Why share anything? And I think that, you know, to the point that you made, I think that there's a level of courage in being authentic. There's a level of courage in vulnerability, in being willing to look at yourself honestly and really, and to look at what you love honestly and really, and to be willing to, in a sense, put your heart out and say, this is the truth of who I am. This is the truth of what I believe. This is the truth of what I see, knowing that people might not agree with it. It's a scary thing. It's a scary thing to take that and, you know, to put that out there. But I think that in many ways too, you know, the point that you made, you can't fake love. Hmm. You can't fake it. Whether people are aware of it or not, they in interacting with and in consuming your content, they will feel it. They will feel a certain way in consuming what you have written. And I think that there is something really special to be said about people and writers and creators who are willing to put their hearts on the line and to really invest themselves courageously in what they're creating in service of making a difference. Because to me, that's the kind of stuff that changes the world. That's the kind of stuff that really inspires people. That's the kind of stuff that breaks through, you know, the barriers and the guardedness and the defensiveness that so many of us are walking around with, the layers yeah. that we've put over our heart.
And, you know, you're speaking from experience because you have written about your own personal experience, about relationships, and you've like done the bold thing, which is to put it out to the public. And I'm curious mm-hmm. about what that experience has been like when you were speaking about dating and your own dating experience mm-hmm. and talking about things that yeah. I think are quite vulnerable. What was the experience of like sharing it publicly like that?
Yeah. I mean, I feel very lucky in that I have not had many instances where I have shared something vulnerable and I've had just a horrible, you know, reaction or some really,
like
you know,
nightmare.
Hateful
yeah.
reaction. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so I think, you know, it's like part of it might it's there. It's like, there's a lot of, I think that there's a lot of factors in that. One of the things that I'm cognizant of is like, in some ways I have a level of privilege in that too, in that like I'm a white man that I think might be different for other folks of color, you know, other folks who are in, who have different orientations, different gender identities, you know, that sort of thing. I do yeah. genuinely think that there's a lot more sort of like vitriol and fear and projection that goes on. I do think it's harder for folks in those experiences to be able to share vulnerably and to like find safe spaces. So in some ways it's like, you know, this my safer space, I guess, as a white man is like, it's larger, but, you know, but at the same time too, you know, I think I've also like come to recognize that I have in my community, in the communities where I'm sharing these things, I think that I have really intentionally built communities and audiences that are very caring and kind and welcoming and wanting me to do well and to become, you know, my best self. And, you know, there's also in the off weird off-brand comments or like comments that I've gotten that have landed with me weirdly, I also think that I've continued to deepen my own level of emotional resilience and my own ability to see things that people say as projections of their own fear versus some commentary on my innate value or worth as a person. Because if I'm sharing something from a space of wanting to be open and heart-centric and loving in what I'm sharing, if somebody has an adverse reaction to that, I know that it's not because of anything that I did, it's because this person's afraid of the level of vulnerability and openness that I'm sharing. It's scary to them. And so they're, you know, projecting their own fear onto it. So I think that's also been an element too, is just over time becoming clearer and clearer in that exact, you know, kind of process.
Yeah. Well, similarly, you know, in listening to some of the conversations that you've shared online and just, again, your body of work, you've spoken about mm-hmm. how kindness and weakness are not synonymous, and people often confuse yes. kindness with weakness, right?
Yes.
So yes. what is the most challenging thing to you about staying kind in this world right now?
That's a really good question.
It could also be a laundry list, which is fair.
You know, I think the honest answer is that I, for whatever reason, I feel like I have, for whatever reason, developed this deep love and appreciation for all, just life, just period. And I think that I, honestly, for as long as I can remember, have had this awareness in the perfection and in the paradox of all things, and understanding that nothing means anything, and at the same time, everything means everything. And so I think I've come to this place where I feel very connected to the idea that people do the best they can with the tools that they have at their disposal. And I'm a very firm believer that people all want the same thing, and that people want to feel loved. They want to feel respected. They want to feel like they belong. They want to feel generous. They want to feel loving in addition to being loved. Especially I think in cases where you have people who are actively causing harm, I still believe that that person, in a sense, is doing the best they can. That doesn't mean that we don't need to step in and create boundaries and create safety and do what we need to do in order to protect, you know, health and wellness for everyone around. And I can't help but feel an orientation of love towards that person. So I think that understanding continues to deepen the more that I connect with people, the more that I do this work, the more that I, in a way too, look at my own self-judgments and look at the blocks, the obstacles that I've created or have been created within myself as far as loving myself. And the more that I love myself, the more that I forgive myself, the more that I have compassion and kindness for myself, the easier it is to give that to other people too, regardless of what the situation looks like. And it's a challenging thing. It is a challenging thing. I see it all the time. I talk to people all the time, where, you know, they have a very difficult time in maintaining that kindness or maintaining that level of compassion and love and understanding, which I understand. I totally understand. I don't know. I think for me, I think it's just been in some ways an innate part of just who I am.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That was solid. That's the only term that's coming up to me. That was solid. Wow. What a bro comment to say about that. That's something that quite beautiful you just said. And I was like, that's solid, good. Dude.
thanks.
So what are some ways in year 2023 that yes. some spaces where you still practice creative expression and following your intuition these days? And, you know, I've certainly been one to have like several iterations of that, and whatever is current may not be current later on. So what's fascinating you right now?
Sure. That's a really good question. So let's see, a couple different things that come to mind for me. So I recently have been wanting to pay more attention and to invest more in what I wear. It has never really been a focus for me, aside from just making sure that I feel okay and that I don't feel, you know, totally like out of whack with, you know, what I'm wearing and the clothing that I'm wearing. But I'm coming to recognize that like it feels really nice to be wearing clothing that feels like it's a really, you know, honest and true expression of yourself. And it's just not something that I had really explored. And so even now, like, I'm like going to like thrift stores more regularly, and I'm just like trying things on that seem like they would be cool. I'm like, oh, this seems kind of cool. Like, you know, let me just like try this on. So I'm excited to like continue to sort of like pursue that as a, you know, creative outlet and creative expression. I would say probably like my home too, and like how I have set things up and, you know, how I set up my physical space, you know, is also an element. Cause again, not something that I necessarily had spent a lot of time doing previously, but like, you know, I spend a lot of time in my house, and I spend a lot of time I'm in my office right now. So I spend a lot of time in this room. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's been starting to understand, like, how do I set it up in a way that feels really enlivening, and in a way that feels really energizing, and in a way that like really helps me to feel, you know, most like myself. The other thing that I'll say is, I've been playing a lot of video games recently, and that to me really feels like a creative expression. You know, that there's something that is just very deeply fulfilling to me about playing video games, and about getting better at video games, and thinking about video games, and being enmeshed in, being involved in. I mean, I feel like I really genuinely get into a flow state when I'm playing.
Yeah.
So yeah, the other thing that I'll share, and I think this is sort of like further down the way for me, but a big piece of what I'm working on right now is creating these contracting relationships to be able to go in and do contract training, contract coaching, that sort of thing. Give me a greater sense of predictability and stability in my income, so that I have the time and energy and space to be able to write a book. Because when I think about the ways in which I feel most alive, writing and sharing is absolutely one of those ways. This is another one of those ways. Sharing ideas in this way, in this format, I feel like I get into a flow state doing this.
Yeah.
So the idea of being able to commit to and create a large body of work, like a piece of work like that. I have never had a creative project where I have set out to do something that large and then done the whole thing. And so that feels deeply meaningful to me. And so I'm very excited, you know, in the coming year and years, you know, to be able to produce and share more creative works in that way.
Ooh, I look forward to that. Yeah. Can't wait to catch up with you about more of like just your insights and your inner world. I also got to ask though, what are some of your favorite video games? Cause I'm a gamer, but you know, understandably it doesn't come up all the time in a conversation about mindfulness or something. But
definitely. So, I have basically one video game that I've been playing like almost nonstop for the last 2 years called Apex Legends.
Oh, okay. Okay, go on. It's like online. Yeah. It's like online game, right?
Yes, it is. Yes. So it's are you familiar with Fortnite?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a battle royale style. The way that I talk about it is like, I don't know how familiar you are, or like if first person shooters are your thing, but it's like if Call of Duty, Halo, and Fortnite had a baby, it would be Apex Legends. And there is something about this game that is so challenging, but also so engaging and keeps me so interested, because it is mega challenging. Like, it is incredibly challenging, and it can be incredibly frustrating at times. But also when you're doing well, and when you're like seeing yourself improve, it is so satisfying. It's so satisfying. And, you know, I recognize like there's something about that specific skill, like that specific process, that I think that I sort of naturally have a talent for, or like I naturally sort of tend to. And because to me, it's also a very sort of intellectual, quick thinking, strategic sort of process. And it's competitive. It's a place where I get to like sort of use this and be in this competitive energy that I don't, in other areas of my life, I don't really feel that way, or I don't really have those kinds of, you know, arenas. Yeah, I love it a lot. I could talk about it for a long time.
Oh, I love asking people like what their favorite video games are, because it's such a, it becomes such an interesting, like, special interest of theirs, you know? Mm-hmm. And I like role-playing games, but my best friend, who also lives in Ohio, actually loves playing and streaming Dead by Daylight. So I have jumped on her like, Twitch stream to, like, watch her play Dead by Daylight. And I was like, this is kind of relaxing to, like, it's not, like, it's a new way of, like, parasocial connecting with people. But I was like, you know what? This is kind of, like, relaxing and actually kind of soothing. And I was surprised. I didn't think I would enjoy, like, like watching a stream of, like, it's like video game footage. And I was like, okay, I think I'm starting to get it now.
Anyway. Yeah, there's something about that. You know, it's like participating in somebody else playing is like a very soothing, it can be a very soothing and activity, because I think that, you know, a lot of times I don't think that I think playing is demonized in a lot of ways, or like villainized in a lot of ways. And I think that people have trouble letting themselves play. I think there's like a level of sort of calming or centering of the nervous system that's required, and a lack of stress that's required to be able to do it. But yeah, you know, it's funny. I recently, you know, in the last, like, I'd say like year or so, as I've sort of reconnected with this love of video games that I have, I'm like, if I was born at a different time, if my life had gone differently, I think that I would have genuinely attempted to become a professional esports player, and or a streamer. And I've even thought about that, like, in the last year. I'm like, you know, that would be like a really interesting, fun, you know, like, activity to, you know, participate in. So who knows, you know, where we go from here. So
I hear that's a whole new terrain and everything, but, you know, I probably can't speak on it like others, but yeah, it's like a whole new world, and I feel very old sometimes thinking about that. So okay, I have a last question, which may be two more questions. One is a little more serious, and it's about kind of the coaching world and the world of personal development.
And
I'm curious, do you have anything to say, or what's your perspective on coaching or the service of coaching as it relates to younger millennials, Gen Z, and sort of the younger generation? Because you know, coaching is a couple decades old, and I think in some ways it's had to, like, evolve what training looks like, what working with clients look like, even within the past few years. And I am sort of, like, framing this inside a generational context, but do you have anything to say to that? Would anything be different, or should some coaches consider working with younger generations a little bit differently?
Oh yeah, it's a really good question. So, I mean, I think what comes up for me in thinking about that is that part of my experience over the last 6 years in having been really deeply enmeshed in the coaching and training and professional development space is that I think that many of the paradigms and models and frameworks that coaches have been using and have continued to be trained in, we will start to realize more and more as time goes on that they are in need of an update, and that they are in some ways outdated. And I think, you know, I don't spend a lot of time with folks in Gen Z, and I don't as far as, like, my online consumption habits, I don't consume really a lot, like, a ton of content, I guess, by Gen Z. So I can't speak specifically to, you know, it's more a generalization, but my understanding is that it seems like there is a very, it's a culture of being outspoken, and it's a culture of really standing by what feels right. And what feels morally right. And so I can imagine that as time goes on, and as folks who are in younger generations start to be in places both where they can access and they want to start to access support systems, I think that there will be coaches and coaching modalities and training modalities that end up having to really adapt and reinvent, or stop doing what they're doing. I think that we'll find too that what coaching actually entails and what it means is going to continue to evolve over time, just as our more sort of general level of consciousness as a society, as a global population, as, you know, in each respective generation, as we become more aware, as we become more spiritually knowledgeable, and as we become more conscious, I think that support systems that we look to and the support systems that we participate in are going to continue to change and shift and transform, which can only be a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think that it also means too, you know, which is one of the things that I'm sort of excited about, is that I think that healing and orientation to healing will be included in more and more activities. And I think it will become a larger, more substantial part of the conversation that we have about work and about life and about happiness and about priorities. And, you know, I think if we rewind the clock and just look at 50, 60, 100 years ago, the amount of support that was available for, like, from a healing perspective was very close to none, you know, and or existed in these very sort of niche communities, like underground communities. But it seems to me now that we're on this trajectory where the level of conversation, the level of awareness that we're having around what it means to heal, and, you know, what it means to get supported, and that sort of thing is, you know, continuing to raise. It's very encouraging to me to see the increased awareness and desire for information and knowledge and access to psychedelic medicine. That to me is like, I can't tell you how excited I am that continues to be a larger and larger part of the conversation. And so, yeah, I think all that to say, like, we'll see coaching continue to undergo a transformation. I think it will continue to be more accessible. I think it'll become a larger part of people's lives, whether they're, you know, whether you call it coaching or not.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, that definitely resonates with me. So last question is a little more fun.
Yeah.
What's something recently, or let's say this year, that you've checked out that has cracked you up, meaning like really made you laugh the hardest this year, or anything that's just like really put a smile on your face?
There's a couple sketch channels on YouTube that I have really been enjoying. Like, here, I actually have to look it up so I can tell you. Salvatore Ganocci, if you've ever heard of him, that's like one that I'm super hip on. And then there was one that I just found recently. I'll have to look up the name of it. But I really love sketch comedy. I'll have to look. I don't remember it off the top of my head. I'll have to look it up and send it to you. But yeah, it's probably just been like YouTube videos that have probably like really, really done it for me recently.
Nice. Let's see. Recently, I just saw the movie Bottoms, and that was a comedy. That was pretty good. I recommend it if you can find it. But it's by two people who I think did like sketch comedy and sketch improv at like NYU or something, and so it has that type of humor, like 30 Rock a little bit.
I think
you might be into it. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love, oh my gosh, good comedy movies. The other thing that just came up for me as we were talking about this, did you see Jury Duty?
Is it that show that's like it's like one person doesn't know that it's like a show?
Doesn't know.
No, I haven't, but I actually heard that it was quite good. When at first I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds like it could be a train wreck. Did you enjoy it?
I really enjoyed it. So I mean, I have a very deep love, obviously, for improv comedy. And it is such a unique format. I'm like, I have literally never seen anything like this in my life. And it's the whole concept is one guy doesn't know that he thinks he's showing up for jury duty and everyone else that's there is in on the joke, but they're all improvisers. So they have sort of like a rough, you know, sort of like beats that they need to hit and like sort of things that they need to, you know, create, you know, as far as scenes and that sort of thing. But everything is improvised. Yeah. Like all the, you know, the content, the script is improvised. And that's like such a, that's really like cool to see.
I should check that out because I remember reading some stories about it where they were like, they had to, in the moment, something occurred where they had to like revise a script. Whatever they were setting up could no longer work based on that person's like reaction to something, right? And I was like, That is tough. Yes. That takes like a lot of like quick decision making, and it's like,
yes,
it takes a huge amount of like instinct, but also craft. And I was like, in the moment type of storytelling decisions like that is super tough, unless like, you know, if you haven't tried it, because I had to take some improv classes and I was like, oh my God,
it's so yeah, it's a whole, man. Yeah, it's a whole thing. The last one I wanted to mention really quickly was Inside by Bo Burnham. That like, as far as things that have felt inspiring to me and like really sort of created a visceral feeling and reaction, including laughter inside of myself, like that set the bar, like that set the bar for me.
Yeah, if you want a mix of like laughter and existential crises, you should definitely check out Bo Burnham, because he will give you a heavy dose of both at the same time. Is yeah.
Oh my gosh. You know, that to me is so much of like what makes comedy funny, and so much of what makes comedy impactful is like, you know, we were talking earlier about kindness and being kind, and one of the things that I said was understanding paradox, like understanding the paradox, because I think that it requires a deep level of introspection to get to the point where you understand that two things that seem to be mutually exclusive and 100% in conflict exist at the same time. And to me, that is so much of Bo Burnham's genius, is his ability to create these very engaging experiences where he's speaking to this emotionally resonant thing, and then he immediately flips it on its head to something that also makes just as much sense. So it's like his ability to play with paradox and to include you in the playing with, you know, that paradox, I imagine can be sort of unsettling, because it's almost like he's breaking down the walls of reality, and he's inviting you into this awareness and greater understanding of how everything is the same, and all things are inclusive, and it's all, you know, two sides of the same coin. So yeah, really very talented and inspiring creator.
Yeah, sometimes it's funny how comedy, inside of comedy, you can sometimes explore such rich themes, and sometimes with greater level of depth, because the comedy helps balance out some of the darker inquiries into like the human condition and all of it. And Bo Burnham reminds me of like someone who's really got the chops, like trying to walk that tightrope.
Yes.
And anyway, you're bringing out the nerdy writer side in me, so we could go on forever, but I really enjoyed our time today. And I'm so happy that you said yes to us, like just having a conversation like this. I hope we get to do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Yes. No, me as well. And, you know, thank you so much for the time and the, you know, the really thoughtful questions. And like I shared, like this format, this is one of my absolute favorite things to do. And so thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for, you know, the platform that you provide and the content that you're putting out. And it's really, really cool.